Hello and welcome to Thriving in the Age of Disruption. Today, Dr. Ramesh and I have come out to the countryside fringes of Singapore and are walking into the lush green paradise that is Bollywood Farms, an organic farm founded by Mrs. Ivy Singh Lim. Known as the gentle warrior to many Singaporeans, she is possibly one of the best-known larger-than-life personas in Singapore. Born into a very wealthy family, she champions various causes and walks the talk in living a purposeful life. While there are many who do not agree with her views, which she expresses in straight and colorful terms, we hope you'll be able to hear the deeper message that lies beneath her tough talk and provocative views.
Okay. Good morning, Ivy, and welcome to Thriving in the Age of Disruption podcast series. I'm so excited to see you in person and to have this interview.
Ramesh, I'm delighted to see you too because you're just as beautiful. You are a good friend and I have missed you, and it's a pleasure to see you again.
Yeah, I've missed you too.
I know. The feeling is so mutual. Yeah.
I want to start off with having you introduce yourself to the listeners.
My first introduction is always done this way when there's a crowd. My question is, do you know me? And how many of you are Singaporeans and do not know me? Stand up, and this will be the last day of your life because I carry a knife on my belt. I think I'm the most photographed, most interviewed woman on this island. I dare say.
Definitely.
Even more than actresses, etc. Because I have such a bad reputation for being not afraid of gods, governments, or ghosts, the 3G, because I'm the 4G. Ah. I am the gentle warrior.
That's a lovely introduction. You are the 4G, gentle warrior. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind that.
When Ho Seng and I retired, Ho Seng was the one who started NTUC FairPrice. When we got married, he's my second husband, and I remarried at 34. I met him at the supermarket. I was actually married first time when I was 21 to a lovely person. My father was disgusted, totally disowned me because he's super rich, and he told me that you shouldn't get married. I didn't understand why at that time, because you believe in love and all that. So after 7 years of being married, I decided to sack my first husband and live for the next 7 years hunting, smoking, foraging, fishing. So at age 34, one day, the good God appeared and said to me, now, if you continue in this way, you are sure to die of something, right? So what should I do? He said, you should get married again. So I said, okay, and how shall I do this? Because I'm super rich. My papa was a big land owner and all that. So I worked because I had to keep myself busy, not because I had to earn money. And this good God said, go to the supermarket. So I went to the supermarket, and there was this man standing there, and the caption said, buy one, get one free. So immediately I introduced myself, and after 3 days, we got married.
You're not joking.
Yeah, one was drunk and one was desperate. And the plus one was his daughter. Anyway, she was 16, and I told her, I said, sweetheart, I'm going to marry your father, so don't give me any crap. Okay, because if you give me any crap, I will get rid of you. And if your father supports you, I will get rid of him too. I looked at this kid and she thought, who's this monster in my life? So therein starts the third chapter of my life. And after 7 years, I thought I should divorce him too. Because men get boring too a few years. I mean, you've seen it all, you've done it. How many more ways can you be excited? Right? So you must remember, huh? I'm from the warrior caste.
Right.
So, but I know that Ho Seng is an accountant by training, and he knows how much money I'm worth, right? He'll go to court, and all the judges in Singapore know what a wonderful warrior I am, right? And he will start crying, and all the judges will also start crying, right? And he will give the example of how I torture him. He will say, she calls herself the gentle warrior, but she's not, Your Honor. She must have full attention when she speaks. Even when I'm so dead tired, she'll put 2 razor blades on my eyes so that my eyes have to be open. If I close them, my eyes will get cut, you know? So he'll cry, the judges will cry, and they will give him half my wealth, right?
Oh, no.
Because the woman's charter protects not just women, it protects the bloody men as well.
That's right.
So you would take half. So I'm a very practical person. If that's one thing I've learned, is that I have a powerful father. I don't need a powerful husband. I need a good husband. I decided not to divorce him. And this year, we are celebrating our 40th anniversary. So anyway, he wanted to retire, blah, 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 and all that. And we wanted to go to Perth. And my best friend's husband had a heart attack. So one day I was flying home, opened the newspaper on the plane and read about the Green Circle Farmer. There is a tender in September. So straight away, we tendered for the land and we got the land. We started the whole thing here in the year 2001. So it took me months to quarrel with the stupid donkeys running the bloody agriculture department that farmers are not poor. So we had to change the rules, etc. I call myself the gentlewoman farmer. Because Hosin called himself the gentleman farmer. My friend, Betsy, who was the secretary of the chairman of the tobacco company where we all work, British American Tobacco, she said to me, Ivy, your English is very bad because you don't understand the word gentlewoman. There's nothing gentle about you and there's nothing woman about you. So I said, I beg your pardon. And she said, please don't call yourself a gentlewoman, okay? Call yourself the warrior. Because your father was a warrior. So if you call yourself the warrior, then people will understand why you are so feisty. Then 2001, this World Trade Center happened. Mm. Right? And my husband said to me, darling, stop texting the warrior, the warrior. Okay, you'll be arrested as one of those martyrs or whatever. Mm. So I said, what shall I do? He said, add the word gentle in front of it. So that's why from then on, I became known as a gentle warrior.
Wow.
The gentle is put in as a front.
It's a racket.
Anyway, cheers, water.
Yes, cheers. That was an interesting introduction. Maybe I have two words. One is charismatic and visionary, and that's how I would describe you. And the third word is actually generous, because I've known you from way back during the time when you started the farm, at SCWO, we were both board members. And you were just generous and welcoming. And I think I must have been awkward there, being a little bit younger than the rest of them. Almost immediately, you asked me to come and serve in Netball Association. And that was great because in you, I saw a woman leader who was just not up to forwarding the women's movement, but who was also very passionate that we actually act on the words. That means we produce the results. As someone who was young and had started my own company and was working for others, to me, producing results was so important. I wondered often, how did you actually become so skilled in producing results? Because like you said, you never had to work for money, but you did that to maybe contribute. So were you born with these skills or did you develop it?
I'm sure that first, fundamentally, you must have it in your DNA.
Mm.
So whoever are your parents has got a lot of bearing on what kind of genes you develop.
Mm.
My young childhood was formed by my servants. In those days, we call them servants, okay? So my father never told us who is God. He never told us, don't do this and don't do that. Neither did my mother. So my father was a very powerful person. He came to Singapore when he was 14 years old in 1920. And 29 years later, I was born in 1949. So my papa was, by the time I was born, one of the largest single landowner in this country. So when we were born, there were only rich landowners, farmers, kidnappers, and the bloody British. So you just drink gin tonics, speak like the Queen, and you know about the British. The next group, the landowner, farmer, kidnapper.
Kidnapper.
So the kidnapper, very simple. Your servants and your bodyguards train you. So you tell your servant, when you want to have a pee or a poo, you say, Yong Che, Noi Hui, on you. On you means pee, or si means poo. 1 minute, 2 minutes, you don't come back in 3 minutes, you are kidnapped.
Mm.
So if my servant was looking after Mas Selamat, he would never have escaped. Right, she would have said, Say Chaya, Ni Song On You Are, Mo San Magamuna, Mo Fingli Fingwea, Samuel Ni Chu Kawa, which translated means, son of a bitch, you want to pee? Don't shut the door.
Wow.
Okay? This is your servant, huh? and you want a drink, you say, Hyeongjae, can you please get me a glass of water? Thank you. And her reply is, Chikero, get it yourself. You got no hands and feet. Are you retarded?
Wow.
Okay? And your reply would be, my young chair, you know, my whole gong or lom, though, no, young sister, it is too high, I can't reach it. Eating or lopping it. Mo gouging or la, no, my whole chin is gong lantahan, okay? This time I take for you, don't disturb me anymore. Now, I also speak Hokkien, etc., because my papa had six Chinese women. Bai go, bai la, wa be ki liao. That means he had a different name, and Friday, Saturday, I can't remember. Like God, he rested on Sunday. My father was a God to me. He could do anything. He could protect me from anything. We were rich enough to do anything. But the most important thing we learn is discipline. Because smart children usually are very, very naughty. So if you don't have discipline, you can never make it. We were disciplined. He never disciplined us. But the servants did, and the bodyguards did, right? And if you report to him and say, Papa, you know, the servant beat me, and he'll ask you, why did the servant beat you? And you say, I don't know. And he say, okay, I'll ask the servant to come and tell me why he beat you. And you are petrified, the servant, so you dare not tell a lie in front of the servant. That's why in schools, in the old days, when your teacher beats you, you dare not tell your parent. Because your parent will beat you again. To me, I think we have lost this element of discipline in children.
Yeah.
Okay? Then I was sent to St. Anthony's Convent.
Ooh.
St. Anthony's Convent, your driver brings you and delivers you to the nun. You open the door, they close the door. You look around, the wall is damn high, you know. And you tell yourself, look, this is a prison. You cannot escape, okay? So you behave yourself. All right, so the discipline there as well. They train you. You ring a bell, you walk. You ring a bell, you sit. You ring a bell. I tell you, it was a school with fantastic discipline standards and values of charity, of truth, etc. And I think my father made the right decision to send me to that convent. Because when you're young, the most important thing is discipline. If you discipline, you can be trained to do anything. But if you don't have the discipline, you've got a problem. As an Anthony's Convent, they make you pray all the time. You pray in the morning, you pray after recess, you pray. They make you pray so much that several of my friends became nuns. And I tell you something, if I had completed my education in St. Anthony's Convent, I think I would have become a nun. God saved the convent and God saved the Pope. Because if I became the nun, I will ask the Pope, why is God a man, Jesus a man, Buddha a man, Prophet Muhammad a man, and Allah a man? And we all say amen, isn't it? So God saved all these people and sent me to Katong Convent. Now, Katong Convent is also another beautiful convent with slightly different value system. Discipline, and they encourage you to sing and dance because of Katong Convent. And it's got a broader sense of education in rounding off a person, in singing, acting, and dancing. I think my greatest skills of singing, acting, and dancing, and speaking
was developed. What I'm hearing is that there were three core pillars to developing your personality and character. One was, of course, you were gifted by your parents, right? But then there was that early discipline, whether it was with the servants, or it was in the schools. And I think you're pointing to something very important here. You can be a genius or you can be really smart, but if you don't have the discipline, you can't make anything out of your life. And yes, that's true. That's missing in today's society.
Yeah.
People just don't want to give themselves to that structure called discipline. Two is values, about how you picked that up at St. Anthony's Convent. Values of charity, being truthful. And then the second convent, which was almost like the finishing school, which empowered you to express yourself and to become that person with the skills in acting and dancing and singing, where you're very well known for being this exceptionally expressive person.
My father, of course, did play a part. And what he taught us was about teamwork and who we are. The teamwork is this. When you ask him, Papa, I want to climb this tree, he will never say yes or no. He will ask you, why do you want to climb the tree? And you say, because I'm going to pluck that fruit. Why do you want to pluck that fruit? So that I can see if I can eat it. So he said, well, do you need to climb the tree? And you look at him like, Papa, you think I'm a bird, I can fly up there? And you look at him and he said, take a stick and throw it at the fruit. And then fall down. But if you're a smart kid, you'll say that, Papa, that fruit looks a bit soft. When it falls, it might break. So he said, well, ask your brothers to help you. They hold the cloth so that the fruit drops. You see? But in these days, when you look at the kids, when they ask their fathers anything, don't run, don't jump, don't this, don't that, don't everything. I can't stand it. So who we are? We are super beautiful because we are mixed-blooded. We're super smart because we are half Indian and half Chinese, the strongest mixture, I believe. We got super memory and all that. So how do you teach your child about who you are? My father was a Hindu. My first mother is Cantonese. My mother is Hokkien. And they all believe in whatever they want to believe. My father never insisted. So he built an Indian temple in Chander Road, the Sri Lakshminarayan Temple, a northern Hindu temple. He built a Chinese temple in Moonstone Lane where I was born. He built a tomb for a Muslim woman, also in Moonstone Lane, on the property we owned. My brothers all went to St. Andrew's School because we owned all the land next to St. Andrew's School to the river. And he sent me to St. Andrew's Convent. So we could go to church, we could pray to whatever. He never told us who to. But he asked us this. Every morning, you look at the sun and then you ask yourself, who am I? What am I? Where am I? When am I? And why am I? Then you realize that you are God. You can create, you can nurture, and you can destroy. It's called God, the creator, the nurturer, and the
destroyer.
Okay, but Hinduism is the first recorded philosophy of life. And they came to the conclusion that God created all of us. If you don't nurture, when you create, you will destroy. Mm-hmm. Very simple. So when you come to that realization that you are actually God, right? And that there's a lot you can do, right? I am super rich. Mm-hmm. And when I die, I think I'll be even richer.
Mm-hmm.
So what shall I do with all this that I have? I have no children. Because I believe that the instruction from God not to eat the forbidden fruit is very simple. God didn't want us to produce like animals.
Mm.
Okay? If we were to produce, it was in a spiritual way.
Mm.
Right? So to me, I believe that I am God.
Great.
And I can do a lot of things. I can create, I can nurture, and I can also destroy.
That's
because
right.
Sometimes you need to destroy to rebuild.
That's right. That's really profound how you have described your thinking around God and the three aspects of creation, nurturing, and destruction. So, Ivy, we heard how it was growing up, being connected to nature, seeing and understanding that you're part of the universe. And in my experience, I know that it's different from discovering one's purpose in a personal development program. The biggest issue about all this is that people think that just because they have discovered a purpose and that's all they want to focus on, it's about themselves. But actually, part of discovering one's purpose is what we can do to contribute out there. So I want to move into a new conversation, and that is about your spiritual journey. Can you take some time to describe it for us?
I think that's very good way of describing it. People must first go back to really who they are, right? To the day you are born, to the background that you're from, and then what you think going forward you can do. Because unless you go back to really understanding it and getting enlightenment,
yes,
like what your role is, you could create a lot of havoc in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at 73, I think I have finally come to realize my real role.
Mm-hmm.
And that all the time from young, I've been trained to start doing that. I hope by the time I'm 80, that I'll be fully enlightened. Another 7 years to go. Yeah.
Wow.
After all, Buddha died when he was 70. I believe that when you reach that level of enlightenment, you know it already.
Yes. Yeah. And it's time to go.
Yeah.
What you're also saying here is that it's a journey and we have to keep on that path because that's like the biggest objective to who we are and why we are here and what we are doing. Your father obviously was an extraordinary entrepreneur and he had an entrepreneurial mindset. And at some level, you have an entrepreneurial mindset. I think actually the entrepreneurial mindset is what we need in today's world of disruption because there is so much of change and we can't cope with the change if we don't know how to adapt, to pivot, to be able to change our thinking. So what do you think is the biggest barrier for us to have an entrepreneurial mindset?
I noticed one thing about Singapore parents and Singaporeans. Mm. Whenever you ask Singaporeans the question, the first word that comes out of their mouth is no. Like when I talk to my staff and I ask them, a simple question like, why is this? The answer is no. And that irritates me. Mm-hmm. I say it is not no. Answer the question. Huh? What time is it? No. I think it's the whole culture of the country. You must remember, with all due respect, Lee Kuan Yew was a very strong leader and nobody's there to say no to him. So that's a culture that's inculcated in our education system, in everybody. And whenever they are faced with something, it's no. Mm. But my father taught me the thing about looking at things and question why. So if your kid comes to you and says, I want to do this, and so I say, no, you ask your kid why.
Mm.
And then you'll be surprised that the kid maybe has a damn good idea that you never thought of. So if you don't bring children up to understand why are you doing this, what are you trying to achieve, how are you trying to overcome a problem, if you keep saying no, they'll just sit there and be a donkey or a robot. Many of the ones running many of government agencies is full of these people. They never have thought of what to do in a situation. And this is the biggest problem because they have never been running businesses. I collected rent when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, because both my brothers were abroad. I was number three. So I collected rent. So you just imagine a 14-year-old collecting rent already, writing my father's rent receipts. I even calculated the milkman's delivery of milk to our house. In those days, it was how many chupas, you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how much to pay the worker and how to train yourself to talk to the worker. And all that. So from young, you're in that business already.
So what do you want the Singapore government to focus on?
Singapore is the richest country in the world. Why should people's claim to fame is that they live poorly for the past 40 years? They should say, I live poorly and I am going to change it. That's why I'm going into politics. Stop telling me your father is a taxi driver. I am not impressed. I want to hear my father is so bloody rich, so bloody powerful. I'm going into politics because I don't need money. I should use my strength, my wealth, etc., to make first my community and then my country. I'm generous. Why not? Because I can't spend all my money. The people all talk about, women power and all that. Look at the British monarchy, Japanese monarchy, etc. Girls cannot become the queen unless there's no boys. Right? So from there already, you go and talk, what equality, what women's rights? It's all bullshit. Okay? Look at our situation in Singapore. How many people do we have? How many women are in politics? We have a lot of smart women, but they don't want to be there because they know the system is not up to their value system. I would not go into politics unless the party that I join is guided by my same values.
Mm.
And that is very, very difficult to find. If I can find, as I said, 9 women who are exactly like me, rich, powerful, beautiful, not worried about anything, and have the same value system and also drink whiskey.
Yes.
I would start a party. Like, it's very difficult to get 9 other people to have the same value system as I have. And that's why I think a lot of women don't get married, because it's very hard to find a husband who has your own value system.
True.
It's very true, because if you have very high value system, there's very few people who can match it.
That's true. Yeah? Going back to the entrepreneurial mindset, what you pointed to is it starts off with that simple thing, which is to just ask the question why, versus being stuck with it's a yes or no. And if we learned how to think through the process and to solve that problem, we'll become resourceful in life. We'll know how to manage your risk or uncertainty, and we definitely will know how to create value. As a 14-year-old, you had the best education in being the future entrepreneur.
And most important, you can smell a rat. And you can smell bullshit, because you know the smell of cow shit, bullshit, chicken shit, or real shit, or what shit. So nobody can give you any BS. Simple.
That's really interesting. You seem to be pointing to the need to be self-discerning, right?
The world is full of BSs, especially a country like Singapore. All the carpetbaggers from the west, like the east, the north, are all coming here like sharks because they can smell blood. So you look at all the women who are being conned. I watched this program on TV that day. A woman can transfer $300,000 to somebody she has never met. Why did she do it?
Do you have any advice for young women aspiring to do something with their life, or even women who are older who think that they have something in them and they want to express it out here in the world?
Well, I don't think it's only women. I think we must teach children. We must teach children that they are born for a reason. So the first thing in the morning, jump up, look at the sun and say, what is my role today? And then go and do what you have to do. Don't get up in the afternoon, which was something that my father never allowed us to do. If we sleep beyond 7 o'clock, I think he'll switch off that main switch so all the air conditioners go off so we wake up. So like me, I wake up at 5 o'clock every morning. And you meditate a bit, you think about life, review what you think you're going to do for the rest of the day. So just encourage kids to love life. Every day to say, what shall I do? If you just teach children that kind of attitude, what I call the warrior attitude, they will all do well. And then the most important thing, they must always know that they have somebody to go to who will seriously help them. So any woman who got a problem, got a husband who beats them or whatever, come and see me. That bastard will not live for more than a day to do it again. We, one of the richest country in the world, whenever I hear of disadvantaged family, families who have no food, etc., it makes me sick. We have enough money in this country to make people live a dignified life, and we can afford it. Very simple. Lawrence Wong has been nominated. I will be writing to him soon. Give children all free education who are born in Singapore, right up to university level. If they can't get into your universities in Singapore because we don't have enough universities for our population, send them abroad, let them go, give them a loan, an interest-free loan, and when they come back, they pay. That is very simple, just that. Wipe out all freehold land and institute a 120-year lease so that the government controls all the land, like China does, like Indonesia does, so that no family becomes forever rich. Okay? Right. So that is why I have no children. When I die, I have already started a trust called the Gentle Warriors Trust, not Ivy Singh's Trust. But there are a lot of other women whom I like to think are also gentle warriors. They don't have as much money as me, maybe 1 million or 2 million, but they can also donate it to this Gentle Warriors Trust. I have a group of very intelligent, experienced women who sit on as the board. And people always ask me, but Ivy, how you know they will do what you want them to do? I said, very simple. It's in their conscience. I cannot control their conscience. But I believe that there is always an equalization at the end of our life. I believe that what you do in this life has a bearing on your future life. I think I must have been a very wonderful person in my past life. I have never turned on a computer in my life. This is my 3G Nokia phone to this day. I have never made a coffee in my life. I've never cooked in my life. I've never cleaned my shoes in my life. I am 73 years old. I am super bloody blessed. I believe because in my past life, I'm good. Look around you. Look how many rich people are there left. It's getting lesser and lesser. You know why? Because most of the rich people are evil and not thinking of the next life.
So when you look at disruption, one of the key things is that life is not going to go the way you expected it. And that becomes a setback. For some of us, it actually becomes like a crisis. How have you dealt with setbacks in your own life?
When I turned 50, my best friend's husband had a heart attack. So I thought, I'm going to get a heart attack too. I went to a few good doctors, especially the heart doctor, who said, look, stop being paranoid, do an angiogram. So I had an angiogram done when I was 52, I think. Then my eyesight, I had a cataract operation at 52. I got it right, I had perfect eyesight. My friend, a doctor, he told me to drink whiskey instead of taking Xanax. He told me, I'm a doctor sitting next to you. On the plane, you won't have a panic attack, right? And if you do, I know what to do. So when I got on the plane, I said, now what should I drink? And he said, your usual. So 6 whiskeys later, because it takes 6 hours from Perth to here, every hour one whiskey, I arrived happy and not psycho. So I think when you're faced with an issue, you must get the right mentor, the right person, the right doctor, the right lawyer, or the right whatever. Don't listen to especially women who will tell you all kinds of things because they themselves are not strong people. So unless you speak to a strong woman who doesn't care about setbacks, like my eldest brother is a doctor, he always say to us, if your left hand is cut, you still got the right hand. You look at people, they lose their arms, they lose their leg, they still make it. You watch on Netflix, I just saw a very interesting show called The Orphans, you know, 12 Orphans, and they form a football team. They made it. They're smaller, they're all that, but they made it. And there's so many shows nowadays you can watch which actually tell you that your mind is your most important. Rules and regulations must be there, right? But you must choose which rule and which regulation to follow. And if you think that that rule and that regulation is stupid, then you must get to the person who's making those rules to change it. For example, when Hossein and I took over this land, the rule was only one single-story house, no more than 180 square, 5 square meters, because our leaders, they think farmers are poor. Look at all the Western farmers, they are super rich, they grow enough to export to us. We got a stupid mentality, we think money is important. Money is only paper. You can smoke it, you can steam it. Money is only paper, okay? Right. So these are the few kind of lessons that you must institute into people so that they don't have this mentality that there's something small in it. It's the end. You must have the right mentor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just to recap, so you're talking about the right mentor and also the right support structure. Mm-hmm. And making sure that person is an expert is important. Number two is don't be constrained by the no's. So it's almost like reframe it and look at why not.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So it all boils down to what is your perception?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing enough to train your mind so that you can change your perception as things happen to you? And the last piece is you've given us an access to look at money. Money can be many things to us. But if we can just see it as an instrument, like it's just paper, we don't have to define ourselves and our self-worth with the money we have or we don't have or we can't have. Thank you for sharing your thoughts around crisis and how to deal with that effectively. You think it's possible to live a simple life? And how do you do that?
A simple life is get up in the morning and thank whoever you want to thank that you managed to get up that morning. Stand up. Then you just carry on and do what you have to do for that day or for somebody or whatever. When Jose and I moved here, I created a circle of life. Wherever I go, I create a circle of life. You can even be in a HDB and you create a circle of life. Somebody asked me this question, how would you have started Bollywood if you were not rich? And I said, very simple. I would look around the circle of HDB around me. And then I'll look where I can make a pond, dig a pond, where I can make a forest, where I can make a farm, things like that. And I will take my excavator and excavate the pond. So they said that, oh, but then the government will stop you. I said, look, the government won't even know I'm doing it. Because most of the time, they are sleeping in the air-conditioned offices. They will think I'm a contractor, and I would have built a beautiful circle of life. And from there, everybody can do something. If everybody creates a circle of life where all lives matter, not black lives matter, like yellow lives matter, like women lives, all lives matter. Like here at Bollywood, we do not kill snakes. So even if we see a cobra, my staff are trained to say, go away, don't disturb us. If the cobra insists and keep coming back, we then kill it, okay? Otherwise, we don't, right? Yeah, we don't kill anything unnecessarily.
I love your example of just being grateful for getting up in the morning, giving thanks to the universe, looking at the sun, praying, and then reviewing what is it that we want to contribute. Yes, there is a simplicity in that. So that's great. But more importantly, I love what you described as a circle of life. It's almost to me an analogy to think, because if you looked at any situation, whether it was in your case starting this farm, so what's my circle of life? Who are the people around me or the HDB flats around me? And then not only are we starting to think around that circle, we are also starting to connect to the related networks, whether it's people or the resources or the support structures. The third piece is every single thing which is in there, people and animals, and they all matter. So not to discount it. That's really inspirational. Thank you for sharing about the circle of life. You know, Ivy, when I used to serve on the board of Netball Association, I was always curious about one thing, and I'm going to ask you that question today. Why were you so passionate about netball as a sport?
I must also tell you another secret, like netball. Everybody thinks that I have a great love for netball. Let me tell you something. I don't believe in sport. White men swim, black men run, yellow men do ping pong, big people do carry weight. So it's white monkeys, black monkeys, yellow monkeys, big monkeys. I am not a monkey. I do not play a sport. I was in netball not because of it being a sport, but it was a woman's sport. Because I believe very much that when the mother is healthy and active, she will breed healthy, active children, and she will create in her house a circle of good health. So it starts with the mother. So that's why I was in netball. And to me, I don't think people should play sport because they have to win a medal. I think people should be in sport to be active, to be healthy. That is more than having to win medals. My success in netball was because I realized that it is no point of us trying to be world champion because we will never be. But we should try at Asian level. And most importantly, it should become a grassroots game so that every woman has netball. You know, netball you can play in three generations, no, daughter, mother and grandmother, which
That's
Australia
right.
does, you know? Everybody can play.
So it's almost like keep the focus. You have to know the big picture. Whilst you're also working on that small little goal time from time to time and the milestones. How would you describe thriving or flourishing?
I do not believe in thriving. I believe in living a good life and that women should just stop this breeding mentality. Breeding is not the answer for this country. Gods and governments want you to bring so that their business model will continue. Why do you bring more out into the world? We have too many people already. And mostly, stop breeding. Be selective.
Well, some people might say that in the case of poor people in their communities, their hope and their aspiration comes from thinking that one of their children will make it.
In life, all of us have choices.
And we have to lie in the beds that we make, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the point. Be responsible for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hate generating this mentality of charity. I don't do any charity. I never do any. Okay? I help you make your life a success. Make your life such that you can support yourself. You can support a family if you want to have children and all that. But if you cannot, I also want to train you to make yourself the end of that
situation.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
Do not promote poverty.
That's why I'm so passionate about having people know about the entrepreneurial mindset, because I think that's how you can train yourself to be resourceful and to deal with any situation that you're in.
I have always said, in the old days, there were women who would swim across the causeway, right? They would swim across the causeway with one small rubber, right? I've always said that if I ran this country, I'll put a phone there. And when they reach it, they telephone me, Miss, Madam President or Madam Queen or whatever. I'll send my driver, pick that woman up and say to that person, what do you want to do in my country? And give them enough support that they can do it. They have that kind of mentality to swim across the causeway with a rubber tubing. They must have that drive in them to want to do something useful.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. So I hate the word charity. I think you should speak to the person, find out what is the core that this person is made of, and then tackle that core so that that person can do something out of that person's life.
What do you think about ageism and the fact that people have a value system around what older people can do or cannot do?
I mean,
and especially with women.
We have to be very practical, so, right? When you run a business, for example, I hate to employ Singaporeans. They got maternity leave, paternity leave, vaccinity leave. They got all kinds of leave. Everybody wants to work from home. How am I going to run my business if everybody works from home? Don't work for me. We also have to be very practical.
Yes.
In running a business. You see, most of the work has to be done with your hands. All this digitization and all that, this helps you to simplify your work procedure.
Or to scale.
Or whatever. But the point is, the work must be done with your, first your brain, and then your energy and your hand. The robot cannot just go and take the rice out of the bin, wash it and cook it. That's why this stupid thing about digitization and all this, you must be practical. You see, no Singaporean can do the work on a farm, even if I pay $10,000 a month.
That's right.
Because they're not trained to do hard work. So ageism is the same, women's power is the same. You know, how strong you are, how old you are, and your nature of the beast determines the work the beast can do. And we are all beasts, so that's all. What's the difference, isn't it? So if you employ somebody, you must look at the person totality. Don't look at the work and find the person to fit the work. You must look at this person and think, in your organization, where can this person fit? Our driver, he's been with us for 40 years. He's still here, but now he cannot drive anymore because twice already he nearly killed me. I mean, I'm sure I won't be third time lucky.
Of course.
Okay? So I straight away tell him you cannot drive anymore. So he is our security. He does security, simple things like that. Or pluck the flower and dry the flowers to make teas and all that.
Right.
So you have to do that.
Right.
In fact, we employed a blind boy and he worked for us for almost 10 years. He washes dishes.
Wow.
But we make it in such a way that everybody must scrape all the plates properly, stack it in the same size. So all he does is stack it in the same thing and he sprays it, he bangs it into the thing and it jumps out and he can sort it out.
Right.
So you have to do that, you see.
Yes. You know, you've got to re-engineer the tasks and activities for the target group.
Yeah.
That's the thinking that's not being done with when we say, oh, there are so many jobs that you can go and get. But actually, for the young people, for the older people, for women, for men, it'll be different things for different people, right?
And I think this, especially farming, our leaders are giving the impression, all technology, come on. The reality is, it's hard work, okay?
Yes.
No matter high tech, low tech, whatever tech, it still needs manpower.
That's true. Do you have any advice or any thoughts about family businesses? Because I spend a lot of time working with family businesses. The challenge for family businesses is that they start off with a founder or an entrepreneur, and over time they pass it on to their next generation. And usually at that point, conflicts will set in because of interpersonal relationship. And also the fact that they have to deal with the stresses of the business concern as well as their own interpersonal relationship.
Yes. First, Ramesh, can you tell me what is the meaning of family?
Sure. Oh, family.
What is family?
Well, that's an interesting question. A family would be a group which is constituted by birth or sometimes through marriage. That's a technical, societal, legal definition. And then, of course, some people will say that a family can be any group of people who constitute themselves as a family because they are willing to have the values that you see in a family, which is to be loyal, to trust each other, and to demonstrate some aspect of altruism. And this is actually reciprocal because you can count on me and I can count on you, and we will do something for the common good.
You are absolutely right. Family is through birth, your blood, right? Mm-hmm. So blood is cheap. Mm-hmm. You can go to the blood bank. And family is marriage. Mm-hmm. Marriage is disposable. Mm-hmm. Now, to my definition of family is people who sincerely love you. Okay? Who sincerely love you and will do anything for you. So, as I said, almost all men are evil. And most women are stupid. So your family constitutes your relatives. Constitute of men and women. You think they really love you? You think they really care for you? Okay? So I am not cynical. I'm very practical. Family are people who love me. I have no children. My family are my workers, my dogs, my cats, my friends, people who love you and true friends. I am very happy to say that I have at least 10 to 20 people who really love me. And if I'm in trouble and I call, they will definitely give me money and blood, which your relatives won't do. I must tell you a very interesting incident about family business. You know, I have a group of women called Club 13. When I was younger, and we were drinking to very late. I can't remember whether it was at the Pine Tree Club. Somebody had dropped me there, so I was waiting for my driver. And there were two old Chinese guys speaking in Hokkien. And they looked at me because I'm a bit dark-skinned, so they think that this bloody Indian or whatever wouldn't understand Hokkien. So he was advising his friend. He said, look, if you want your business to continue, never leave it to everybody. That means all your children equal, because they'll close it down. Because all they want is to take your money and forget your business. So he said, you find one person among all your children whom you think is going to carry on your vision and your drive and your values, and then you give this person controlling, then the rest have something. So that if the business does well, they all get a little bit. But if the rest can kick this bugger is in trouble also. When he was telling his friend in Hokkien, just as my driver appeared, I said to him in Hokkien, you're absolutely right. He nearly fainted, but he didn't expect me to say it.
Then that's the dilemma, especially I think in today's modern world where parents want to be fair or to be seen to be fair. So they go around just doing the equal divide. But equal, it does not mean equitable. Neither does equal mean a good succession. Yeah. So
you must pick your successor who has your same values. Most important is your value. And drive, that kind of thing.
Right. And maybe also the vision that you've created as a founder and what you want this person to continue with.
Because very often you can have a few children,
they will all definitely have their own system value. Right. Because one might think, if I get 10 million, I'll be happy to live in Australia or New Zealand or whatever. Why I want to carry on the business, quarrel with somebody every day, curse and swear the workers every day. So it's the makeup of the person. So your successor must first have your value system and then have your drive to see that you want it to continue.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what about your father's business? I mean, what happened with
My father was a big landowner. As I said, the biggest landowner. The government acquired 95% of our wealth. Now, the last estate was Sime, and it was 6.5 million square feet. And only 30 years ago, they acquired 6 million square feet, $1 per square foot, took all the sand and put in Marine Parade, right? That's why we have Marine Parade and we got Goh Chok Tong. But I like Goh Chok Tong, he's a nice person, right? But on the 500,000 square feet, my papa already had 100 houses, which were rented to the British, etc. But we were allowed to rebuild. That's why in 1989, I had to leave the tobacco company where to come back to run the business. But my youngest brother had retinal detachment and was almost blind. So he and I built up the rest of our land bank. And then I wanted to go to Perth to live. What else is there to do? Isn't it? So, and that's where I found this land. So I believe very strongly that fate, your life, your bond, and it's already decided what you should be doing. So therefore, you should always pray every morning, look at the sun, and make sure that you are guided to do the right thing. Yeah?
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your Gentle Warrior Trust. Not only are you going to be moving a substantial amount of your wealth there, but you're having it be open to other people who may also want to contribute. What are some of the activities that you're doing in this trust?
Well, basically, if you read the Constitution, it is set to assist women and to empower women. So, for example, we don't do charity. So if you need money because you're in trouble, we don't do that. But if you need to improve yourself, even a simple thing like getting a driving license, because this, they call it Skills Future, it's all BS. It's only $500.
Right.
You know how much it is to get a driving license?
Yes.
So say a woman comes to me and says, oh, I need some help. The board will give it, and then find out what is it. So why do you want to have a driving license? So if she said, look, I need a driving license so that I can earn some money. I can drive my parents to the hospital. I can drive my kids this and that sort of thing. So there is a reason, right? So then we will lend her the interest-free or maybe as a gift.
Right.
If it's not such a lot of money. And then that person will finish it. So we have already put a few women through many things, you know. You see, that's why my board members are very important. Because you know, I don't want to decide who I can lend money to or help, because I'm quite a bigoted person. You know. For example, first, this thing means a lot to me. So there was this girl who applied to go to London to do acting. So I told my board member, she's so ugly. Like, she's not going to be an actress. So this board member told me, now, Ivy, stop being a bigot. You don't go to acting school because you are beautiful. You go there because you can become a good teacher. You see, so it never crossed my mind that there was another girl and she applied to go and be a chef. I was really biased, you know.
Right.
I should have put my foot down and said no, because she actually walked out on us and never returned the money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I have like, this is my sixth sense.
Yes.
I'm quite, when I look at you, I can either like you or I can it's like you. But I'm trying my best, and hopefully by the time I'm 80, this bad habit of mine...
You've transformed it.
I'm transforming, yeah.
But that's good, right? Because that's a sense of realism and also in ownership, because if you just allow things to happen, knowing that it's not going to happen, then you're not going to see the results. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah. And by the way, when I die, all my wealth will be transferred into the trust. So it's quite a substantial amount.
Would it be accurate then to describe it as like a micro credit kind of a cooperative where people actually are also empowered to return it because they're not just, you know,
it's
getting it like,
it's like a microfinancing thing. You know, we help the person, a woman buy a sewing machine or so, we will help. We help in education, in skills, in whatever.
And how are you making this trust better known to other people?
Well, we launched it when I was, I think, 66 years old.
Oh, almost 7 years now.
It was quite a low-key kind of thing. So this year, we're going to revamp it. And my publicist has put together some interviews, etc. So we are looking to launch it probably later on in the year, maybe in September. We will relaunch it, get more publicity for
it. Lovely.
There are a lot of women who, like me, can be married, not married, whatever, who are rich in their own estate. So when they die, instead of having 1-2 million, instead of starting their whole trust or 1-2 million, they can donate that into the Gentle Warriors Trust. So the first Gentle Warrior is actually Tan Le Kun, my mother. Then the second Gentle Warrior is Ivy Singh. Then there'll be a third Gentle Warrior who wants to donate. You know, if you don't have such a big estate, you put under your own name. You can just put under Gentle Warriors Trust.
Oh, that's a good one.
They must also agree with the mission of this trust.
That's really commendable. When you look at the future, there is much more that we all can do because, you know, what is it that we are going to take when we die?
Ramesh, it's not we. It's just a few evil men and mostly stupid women. That's why the world is in this situation. There are very simple answers to eliminate evil, but we are not doing it. The stronger ones are not eliminating evil. They are allowing evil to continue so that always the third dimension of people is always being put down. There's this good, there's this evil, and then there's all of us here. So this good and this evil, if we don't resolve that level, this group, the bulk, will always be suffering. Very simple. For me, if I know for sure you are evil, I will eliminate you.
You know, listeners, there is that knife there. How old is it?
Very old. When we were young, we all trained with a very small knife.
Wow.
To clean your teeth, clean your ears, scratch your head, and to throw at your neighbor's chicken. So this is one we are trained with when we are young. Then as you get older, you progress to a bigger one. When I was young, I could throw this and hit you right here because we are trained to do it. Because you need to be able to guard it. Now, on this topic, in fact, this morning, I was trying to call the president of the Scouting Federation.
Yes.
She sent me a guiding handbook. And which is fantastic. Basically, our training by my father is guides training. And there's a section under outdoors. So they teach you how to make a fire. They teach you how to handle an axe to chop wood and how to make bread without an oven. So they just take a steak and mix the flour and put the thing around the steak and then you cook it and it's bread. And my husband, who is a Queen Scout, he is very good for that. As well as I think all young women must become guides and all young men must become scouts. And I think the motto is so good.
Be prepared.
You must be prepared for anything. And don't think that rain, and you hit rain, you know, that sort of thing. There's a lot of things that you can do. Rain, collect water.
Yes, correct. If life serves you lemons, make lemonade.
That's the sailor.
Yeah. It's been great. It's an enjoyable session. I've learned so much. Thank you, Ivy, for your generosity.
Ramesh, anytime. You are a beautiful person, and I know you try very hard to make this world a better place, especially for women. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the opportunity to be on this show.
Yeah.
I just hope that you won't be arrested for airing my views.
Not at all.
Thank you for listening today. We hope you've caught a glimpse of the strong, powerful woman who is Mrs. Ivy Singh Lim. We're glad to have shared with you her authenticity and raw honesty and how she deeply cares and fights for Singapore, her country, her people, and for humanity. to rejuvenate your senses and enjoy some amazing farm-to-table, really fresh food, you're welcome to visit Bollywood Farms and the surrounding Kranji countryside. Next up, Dr. Ramesh chats with another deeply spiritual and powerful woman leader, Kuntesini Vajarastira, the founder and chairman of Abra Corporation, a leading food ingredients distributing company in Thailand. Be sure to join us again here on Thriving in the Age of Disruption.